Hi, and welcome to Emetophobia Help. I'm Anna Christie, recovered emetophobic and licensed psychotherapist specializing in emetophobia. These podcasts have a trigger warning of words associated with emetophobia. If you enjoy these podcasts or you find them helpful, you can buy me a coffee. Just scroll down in the notes, click on the link, and for a couple of bucks, you can support the podcast. So season four, here we go.
Keep our fingers
crossed. Yeah. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm here today with Louise, who is an old emetophobia friend of mine. Oh, she's not old. It's just that our emetophobia relationship has gone back a number of years. Louise is from London, Ontario, in Canada. Hey, Louise, how are you?
Hi. I'm glad to be here.
That's good. You look fantastic. You always do. What color is that, your hair? Was it fuchsia or is it kind of purple?
It's purple with a bit of pink highlights.
It's really pretty anyway. Really, really nice. Sometimes I wish I could do, I have the ability to record video with audio, but then I'd have to do my hair and makeup. So I don't want to do that. Anyway, so our relationship goes way back. We've talked on our podcast before. I'm thrilled to have you back. That's really great. We met each other on the IES, International Emetophobia Society website chat board, which discussion board forum, I guess we called it then, which is at emetophobia.org, I think. And it's actually a way better system for talking than Facebook, but it just gets almost no traffic at all now. It's all on Facebook, which you never know if Facebook's going to show you anybody else's comment in the group. Mm-hmm. You have no idea, because it just Facebook makes all those decisions for you. But so why don't you, for folks who, you know, because not everybody listens to every single podcast from the beginning, so give us a little bit of your story with emetophobia.
Yeah, when I first met you on like the IES forum, I think I was 17 maybe. And I was going through a period of time where I didn't eat. I lost a lot of weight. I would eat only very little. I didn't leave my house, I think, for 6 months, 8 months. And then when I finally did, it was just a small amount. I lived in England as well.
Yeah.
Completely different place. Yeah. So a bit of a change from there. And it's been a long time.
Yeah.
I remember when I first met you, and you were, for a long time, you were the only cured person I knew of.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know of any other people that were cured of emetophobia.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, I think I had it in my head that it was something that a cure was never going to happen. And a cure, and that might be nice for you, but a cure was never going to happen for me. Like, I was never going to get better.
Wow, that's interesting that you thought that. I think when I first went on IES, I still had emetophobia. I mean, I went there because I found it, when I typed in fear of vomiting, like from the, I don't know, around 2000, I think about the year 2000. So
yeah, that sounds
that's
right.
A long time ago. And it was through that website that I got some pictures. It started with pictures, that somebody had uploaded, a woman named Margaret uploaded. Mm-hmm. She was from Netherlands, I think, and she uploaded some pictures, which was brilliant because there was no Google Images. There was no YouTube, back in the olden days of the turn of the century. Yeah. So what's your journey been since then? Because that's a long time now. So,
yeah, I had some unfortunate experiences with medication. We tried the medication route. And I think it was after about my third or fourth try of a different medication that it just sort of dawned on me that nobody was going to come and help me. Mm-hmm. There was going to be nobody that rode in and saved me. I had some CBT therapy, which was, you know, in our very first meeting. And I told her what my phobia was. She described an incident of food poisoning. And I was like, well, that's why I'm here. Thanks for the help. So I think it just sort of dawned on me that people didn't necessarily know how to help me and that I didn't really know how to help me. So I just sort of started. It was one day at a time. I went out one day more and I ate one day more. And, you know, I recovered to the point where I could live a semi-healthy life. As long as I wasn't ill, I could be semi-healthy. I moved to Canada and moved with my wife. And then we had our child, and everything that I had built up, all my coping mechanisms, I would say they sort of fall apart a little bit. Because just the weight of having a child now and not wanting to project this onto the child. And then as well, I had a lot of childhood stuff happen. And so all of that was overwhelming all at the same time. So I would say everything sort of collapsed. And that's when I started building up again for good this time.
Okay. Yeah. And that's a really common story, isn't it? Like, as I'm sure you know from being around the emetophobic community quite a bit online, that when people have children, and lots of people do have children, even though mm-hmm. most people with emetophobia talk about being afraid to have children, there are still a lot of people who do, and it doesn't mm-hmm. fix it. You know, it's like it's still there, and there are more opportunities to be afraid, I think, when you have kids, because you never know mm-hmm. when they're going to be sick and they bring home germs from everywhere. Yeah, I've gotten to the point now, the grandkids who live here, I'm just exasperated from all the germs they bring home that are not vomiting things, but how many colds they catch. And how many colds I mm-hmm. therefore catch all winter long is just exhausting. So, yeah.
I thought I had a good immune system until I had a child at daycare. And then I was like, actually, maybe I don't have that great of an immune system.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I think the same thing. I try to eat right and all that sort of stuff. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. it makes absolutely no difference if you got a kid sneezing, coughing, whatever in front of you. Mm-hmm. crawl into bed with you at night, and then you're like, oh gosh, then you've got it, right? So what were some of the challenges that you found you know, with bringing up a baby and because your little guy is like 10 or something now, is he?
Nine.
Yeah.
So. Well, I had, like I say, a lot of I would say that in looking at it, a lot of the roots of my emetophobia were definitely related to trauma growing up, trauma from, you know, my parents, anger in the household, anger being such a dangerous emotion for me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And suddenly having a kid and seeing how innocent they are, I think that just kind of, I don't know, that made everything over the edge. And then, you know, emetophobia is really the way that my brain kind of deals with that. So everything just kind of got whipped up until I saw the therapist I saw, and then I saw my EMDR therapist, and we really, really tackled at the root of a lot of the issues. And I remember just crying and saying, I just want to be like 10% better, 20% better, just a little bit better than what I'm feeling now.
Okay.
Would be mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah. And that's not a very high bar, is it? 10%.
No. I mean, the bar is very low. Yeah. I'm like, just make it a little better.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was midway through doing the EMDR. My kid came home from school and said somebody had been ill at school. And I left the house and I was panicking and I was like upset. And I remember just thinking, this is never going away. And then I would say probably within a year, complete turnaround. Okay. I'm a complete different person, to the point where then I joined and did the exposure therapy class, and mm-hmm. and I don't know. I've had conversations with people. I don't know if I would consider myself 100% cured. Mm-hmm. I still get that little rush of adrenaline.
Right.
What I will say is I have confidence that I can deal with any situation. I think a lot of it is you just are like, I can't do this. I don't know what to do. But I have confidence that I do know what to do. If I'm ever on TikTok, which I consider my free exposure therapy, if I'm ever on TikTok and yeah. I see something, like I saw something just today and it made my anxiety instantly just popped up. But then I just sat and then I watched it again. Mm-hmm. And I just, and that is how I sort of just expose myself and make myself look at the videos and the pictures and so forth. But yeah, it's been a long journey. And I think as well, somewhere in the middle of all of that, finding out about ADHD and being neurodivergent and like having okay. Certain sensory things, I think that sort of added to it, because then I could unpick, you know, what was it that I was scared of and what was it that was just a sensory, caused my brain to have like a sensory overwhelm. Like there are certain things that just overwhelm my senses that I cannot handle.
Right.
And learning coping tools for that. So,
yeah. Wow. So there's a lot to unpack with what you just said. and I thank you so much for sharing all of that. But the first thing I think is that you said you kind of figured out that you had certain trauma in your childhood, like parental anger and so on, and how frightening that is for a child. I mean, I think a lot of parents don't realize that, and I don't know what your situation was, but just in general, even if you never hit your children, just the fact that you're angry and shouting is extremely, it can be very, I think it always is terrifying for a child. Because they know that you're mad, and that people that are mad do just about anything, and they get really scared. So you went through EMDR, and maybe for this, we haven't talked much on my podcast lately about EMDR. Maybe you could say a little bit about it, what it is, and how many sessions you had, and what kinds of things you explored there.
I think I was in there for a longer time. I think I was in there for maybe 2 years and doing EMDR. So we set up, first of all, a list of things that we were going to tackle. Mm-hmm. Some of the things had to do with trauma, and some of the things had to do with the emetophobia specifically. And exploring, you know, it was funny how we would find things that were linked, because I would talk about something to do with emetophobia, and when we peel back the layer, like, why are you scared of that? And why are you scared of that? Mm-hmm. We would find the root, and the mm-hmm. root was usually that I was scared that somebody would be mad at me. Mm-hmm. I think the day that I figured out that if something happened, because a lot of mine was in, you know, kids, as a kid, I blame myself for a lot of things. So I think my theory was, if I keep quiet and I don't make a mess and I act perfectly, then nobody will get mad at me. Mm-hmm. And I think the day that I figured out that if something were to happen in my house and I were to get ill, the only person cleaning it up would be me, and that nobody would yell at me, I think I probably cried for a couple of hours after that, because I was like, it just was overwhelming to think nobody would scream at me. I'm not in any danger. It's completely safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and working that in, just the narrative of it being safe, like you're still safe in your body, that was a big one. And as well, EMDR, it does a lot of future planning, future templating, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. which I really like, which is just, you know, okay, imagine that you are home alone, and imagine that your kid does get ill. What's the good thought that you want to have? How do you want to be able to handle it? And then doing the EMDR, the eye movement, to sort of work that into and integrate, like that's your response.
Right.
So it's a little bit more automatic than, yeah. you know, having to remember the plan.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of gets a, yeah. And EMDR, I guess I should have started with this, as stands for eye movement. what is the D and reprocessing, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Yeah.
So with, you know, they discovered that if something's waving in front of you and you move your eyes back and forth, right, left, that you engage first your left brain, then your right, then your left brain, then your right. And it kind of stops you from doing a lot of thinking and rationalizing, and it gets right to the root of the emotion, gets right to the emotional center of the brain. And then they discovered that any right and left side, like, you know, it can be done with sounds on right and left ears, or it can be done with tapping right and left on your knees, or, you know, there are numbered holding paddles that click right and left. It's really quite fascinating. And it was first researched for PTSD for war veterans and found to be very, very effective. There isn't a lot of research around EMDR and emetophobia. There's, I think, one study and of one person in the study. So it's not a randomized controlled study. It's just one person that got better and then someone wrote it up. So that, you know, that's okay. That's cool. But we really need to do a lot more research on it. And I think that I'm sure you found this. I had EMDR as well. I loved it. I found it so helpful. It didn't touch the phobic response at all. Like it didn't. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't really help you not get that phobic response, but it helps so many other things that, you know, it really gets to the root of the problem and kind of can reprocess those things in your brain so that you're in a better position to really work with exposure and stuff like that. So yeah, that's what that is. So that's, you did it for like 2 years. Wow. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think I did it for that long, maybe 6 months or so. And it was the therapist I was already going to that did it. So I just, you know, we didn't do it every single session or whatever, but yeah, that's really cool. You said something interesting also a few minutes ago that emetophobia is the way that my brain deals with that, is what you said, like the trauma in your background. Can you say any more about that and what you meant by it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like somewhere along the lines, don't get me wrong, I've built up this automatic phobic response, but I also have noticed that the more I'm upset about something and the more that I'm, you know, having a hard time with something, it's like emetophobia is that safe outlet for it. And I think that again, is a lot of, from when I was growing up, there was so much that was chaotic, so much that was going on that maybe a little brain couldn't handle. And so it just locked into this, I'm just going to avoid being ill and then everything will be okay.
Right.
And as I got older, that same thing, and the more I felt overwhelmed, you know, maybe there's a death in the family, maybe there's some things happening, the more I feel overwhelmed with life, it just automatically switches back to that. If I just focus on not being sick, being ill, I will be fine.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And I think you're absolutely right on with it as well. I often say to people, if the stress goes up around you in your family system, so it might not even be something happening to you, but something in your family system, if the stress level goes up or if your personal stress level goes high enough, emetophobia rears its ugly head again. You know, it's, and I found that for me, like I've said this probably many times on this podcast, but people still want me to be talking on a podcast. So anyway, but I had a 14-hour surgery, and when I woke up, the first thing I said, like I was obviously in a dazed, groggy, out of it, you know, 14 hours is a long time to be under. And the first thing I said was, I'm afraid I'm going to be sick, you know. And then, of course, they come over and give you a little like cardboard thing because you've not eaten for, you know, 24 hours.
Yeah.
So it's not like you throw anything up. And then I had to really get much, I had to sort of, it took another day to kind of get more focused on the reality of the situation. I wasn't in pain, la, la, la. And then I was like, okay, I don't need to be like this anymore. Like, I don't need to be freaked out about vomiting anymore, because I had sort of my, I don't know, I had my mind back, I guess. But yeah, something, anything happens and it's usually right there. Yeah. And it, I think you're right. As kids, something happened to us. It didn't have to be a horrible thing. Didn't have to be awful, but for some reason we felt alone, as you described. We felt abandoned. We felt emotionally on our own. And our way to deal with it was to think it had something to do with vomiting, which it, exactly. it doesn't.
Yeah.
But, that, you know, it's like we took all that. And you're a great example of a person who's very stable. You have a job. You have a, you know, relationship. You've got a social life. You've got, you know, so everything gets sort of filtered into this little tiny place called emetophobia. As long as you don't feel sick, or as long as no one else is vomiting, the world's great. Everything's fine, because it's all exactly. tied up in this neat little bag. And man, if that bag gets open though, wow, like everything just comes flying out, you know, cars, clowns, what, like it's just a crazy, chaotic, yeah, kind of a place. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. The other thing that you said when you're talking was about having been, I guess, diagnosed with ADHD and just being aware of being neurodivergent like that. Can you say a little more about that? And how did you come upon this diagnosis later in your life? And what's it been like?
It was actually accidental, because I had started taking Adderall for a different reason. And I found that my doctor kept saying, you're going to maybe have this symptom or this symptom from the Adderall. And I found none of those symptoms. I actually felt much more relaxed. It was much more effective than any of the medication I'd been given. And that was a surprise.
Okay.
And so then yeah. I started exploring the reasons maybe why, and looking into that. And as I think the EMDR had sort of processed the trauma, it was like it had cleared the trauma out of the way, but there were still certain responses that I had. Like if I was in a crowded situation, or if I'm, I find if I'm too hot or too itchy, I get really, it's kind of a little bit of a meltdown. And then I started piecing those pieces together, and I thought, what other sensations sort of are kind of overwhelming to me? And there are certain sounds that are I don't want to hear. Okay. They're too much for me. Yeah. And I don't just mean being ill. Mm-hmm. There's other sounds too. And I sort of really pieced together all of those dots. And it kind of, I think that helped in that, not that it gives me an excuse or anything. It just helps as in, I know that's what it is. So it's easier to deal with in my head.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And when I'm getting hot and I'm getting really flustered, I know why I'm getting flustered.
Okay.
Now. I know why that's freaking me out now. And so I find it easier to regulate now that I know why it's happening. I find it easier to regulate. Whereas before, I didn't know why it was happening. I didn't know the signs that I was getting overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to slow that down.
Yeah. My son-in-law, who lives here with us, and their two, and my daughter's two children, he and the two children both have ADD. Two of them have ADHD, and the other one's not hyperactive, but it is an introvert, a very quiet introvert with ADD. So in my very small study of three people, which is not very scientific, but what I can say is it is quite an anxious state. Like, it reminds me of the people that I work with, but in a sort of different way. But there's a sense that the three of them, like, they're just highly aroused, you know, in the anxious sort of way. And that sometimes things like sensory input, they need that to kind of calm down. Like, they need to be more in the quiet, and people need to be not running around and shouting. And I mean, there's six people in our house, two dogs and three cats. So it's kind of, it's kind of not a very peaceful, I mean, we have a lot of rooms in our house and there are places you can go to be quiet, but you know, yeah, so I would think that having like ADD and a phobia would really be a double whammy in that sense. So you've done a great job in your lifetime of being able to kind of break that all down and work on the separate parts and work on them together and kind of get you to this stage that, you know, in your journey where you are now. I mean, I think that's fantastic. Most people don't have that much insight into what would really help mm-hmm. them. Yeah. That's so cool. I wanted to, you briefly mentioned you were in my class the last time, I guess, for the September classes. And I was both mm-hmm. thrilled and sad to see you there. I was thrilled because you're so cool. And then I was like, oh no, I hope she's not really struggling. But you were struggling, but not nearly as much as a lot of other people in the class. But do you want to talk a little bit about why you felt like taking class, doing more exposure work was what you wanted to do at this point in your life?
Yeah, I feel like, I feel like if I was left to my own devices, I would just keep putting it off. So I wanted to sign up for something that could hold me accountable. But I also felt like you said, the EMDR, it really worked. Understanding myself, like why I'm getting overwhelmed, that really helped. But it didn't stop the phobic response. Right. It didn't stop the fact that if somebody was ill in front of me, my heart rate's going up here mm-hmm. and I'm thinking about, like, it didn't stop that. So I guess I wanted to try the exposure therapy. I wanted to watch the videos, see the pictures, and sort of get myself used to the noises. That was a big one for me. The noise is the biggest trigger, I would say, for me. So listening to the sounds, and I found it really, really helpful. And I also found it really helpful. You had a question at the beginning of the class or on the sheet, which was, you know, what's your level of anxiety and can you tolerate it?
Right. Yeah.
And I found that really helpful when I found that when my son, as he invariably does, told me he was not feeling very well.
Yeah.
I was sitting there and that was the question that kept coming into my head, is that I was very, very anxious, but over and over in my head I kept thinking, and can you tolerate where you're at?
Right.
And I found that I could tolerate where I was. You know, in past times my wife wasn't home. In past times, I would have been calling her and saying, you need to get home now. In this instance, I thought, she's off doing something. I'm not going to bother her.
Awesome.
And that was mm-hmm. a huge, huge difference and a huge relief. She went away for a week to see my father-in-law. Yeah. And it didn't occur to me that, you know, being alone with my child was going to be really hard. It was just something that we did for that week. And to feel that freedom is amazing, but I definitely think that I needed the exposure because I definitely feel like I needed to see it and hear it and know that I could tolerate it if it happened.
Yeah.
And
so you hadn't really
tolerated.
Yeah. So you hadn't really had that in the past then with the work you had done with therapists.
No.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure about that, whether you had or you had not. So yes. A lot of it is in working with a professional. I think a lot of it is just memorizing some of the stuff that we say, right? Like just, you know, like that. Can you, what is the number I find is a most important question to ask yourself? Like, so you're not just freaking out in general. You're like, okay, I'm at 7 out of 10. I'm at 7. I already know I can tolerate that because I did that in class. You know, my anxiety went to 7 when I heard those sounds or whatever. I'm only laughing because I gave that first class the sounds before the videos, but I had just put the sounds together for the very first time. And they are so much more difficult to tolerate than the way I used to just send people to the website to listen to random sounds on their own. So anyway, now I know, do the sounds after the videos. But yeah, these things are difficult. A lot of people say, oh, I don't need exposure therapy because I am only afraid of myself vomiting. I don't care about seeing pictures and videos and all of that. And I always tell people, well, try it and see, because I've, you know, 99 times out of 100, you actually will get anxious looking at that stuff, especially, you know, in a situation where you're kind of sitting in a class or with a therapist or something, and you can't just leave, you know, or, well, you can, but like not, you can physically leave, but you can't sort of emotionally just leave. But yeah. Well, it was great having you in the class, and you're just an inspiration to me always. I mean, I remember back on the, you and I were moderators on that IES place, and you always had the most calm and sane things to say to people, even if you were only 17 or I didn't know how old you were, but you were always like really, really, yeah, mature for your age and looking at things in a mature way. So thank you again so much for coming back and talking with us on this podcast, because I'm sure people are going to really enjoy hearing what you have had to say. So thanks again. First of all, I teach a set of 10 classes for people with emetophobia, and you can find information about those on my website at emetophobiahelp.org. I also have a Facebook group called Emetophobia No Panic, and you can look that up on Facebook. If you're listening as a therapist, there is a free website for you at emetophobia.net. It has all the resources you need for free to treat emetophobia. Dr. David Russ, child psychologist, and I recently published a book called Emetophobia, Understanding and Treating Fear of Vomiting in Children and Adults, and it's available at all online booksellers.